Hey, this is Lucius. Welcome back to Coffee with Kerner. Today I'm talking to Mr. McFarland, a civics and classical ideas and world religions teacher at Hickman High School. I'm currently a student under him in his classical ideas class, and we discuss exactly what that means and what his background in teaching and in world religions is. We dive into lots of very interesting topics related to philosophy and religion on this episode, so I'm just going to go ahead and let him do the talking. Enjoy.
Hello, this is Lucius Creamer on Coffee with Creamer. Today I'm joined by my classical ideas and world religions teacher, Mr. McFarland.
Hi.
He is an outstanding teacher here at Hickman. He teaches both classical ideas and world religions, as well as freshman civics. That correct?
Yeah.
I'm just going to start off with a very easy, obligatory question. How do you like your coffee?
Oh, gosh. Black.
Pure black.
Pure black. No sugar, no cream, darkest roast I can get. Every morning, I grind my own beans, use a French press, and I've figured out my own very specific measurements for making my coffee. So I'm terrible at making coffee for other people, but that is how I like mine.
Gotcha. So you like it homemade, all on your own? So
yeah,
you don't like, so you don't like going out to a place and getting coffee?
I like that too. Yeah, absolutely. So, we have some great coffee places here in town.
Yeah.
In Columbia, Missouri. And so absolutely love going out for coffee. But yeah, if I'm getting straight up coffee, I'll just, I'll get it black. I'll get the darkest roast they have. But I also just like drinking just straight espresso or like macchiatos, which, is just espresso with a little bit of cream on it. So, I love coffee. So
do you use coffee as like a way to like get up in the morning, like caffeine?
Because
I know
sure.
Riley said he didn't like coffee, but if he was going to drink coffee, it's not for the caffeine. So like, do you use it purely for the caffeine?
It's both for me, like caffeine and taste. Like I think like most people, I started drinking it for the caffeine, like in college to, keep awake to study and stuff, and just kind of grew to love it. In the morning, I absolutely need it to start waking up.
Yeah.
In fact, when I was a kid, like before I started drinking coffee, I was that way with orange juice. Like I had to have my glass of orange juice as I woke up, and it was probably just like the sugar rush or whatever. So I'm definitely kind of a, needy person as far as beverages go.
I have started getting into making smoothies every single day, like in the morning for breakfast. Is that something you ever tried, or like how do your breakfast foods?
Oh, man. So smoothies are awesome. I have never really gotten into making them, probably just because it's too much work. Mm-hmm. But your breakfast foods, like eating breakfast, is that what you're asking about? So I'll usually either like make an egg and a piece of toast for myself, or I will have some yogurt with granola. Or if it's the weekend and I'm feeling fancy, make some pancakes.
Ooh,
yeah.
Pancakes or waffles?
At home we make pancakes just because I think our waffle iron broke a few years ago and we just never bought a new one. But I like waffles. So waffles are like a going out for breakfast food for me. Mm-hmm. Pancakes are staying home for breakfast food for
me. Yeah, just because it's easier to make.
Yeah, I think so. You need less machinery. I like to minimize the amount of, gadgets, I think, that I have to own in order to do what I need to do at home. So
yeah. So going way back, what would you consider as your first, like, interaction with teachers? And how did those interactions, like, when you're a child, affect your decision to become a teacher?
Let's see. I mean, I remember most of my teachers being really good teachers. So I think I always had pretty positive feelings about my teachers. And in high school, I had a speech and drama teacher who was really good. And she, I think, made that class really fun. And I took it because I had to and ended up really getting into speech and drama and
yeah.
joining the team. I didn't do theater, but I did like the speech tournaments and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And made some friends that way. So that was really cool. I had a professor in college, one of the religion professors in college who I really looked up to,
mm-hmm.
Who just made class really super interesting. You never really knew where discussions were going to go. So I had some good role models and positive examples of teachers, and didn't really seriously think about becoming a teacher until I was already, you know, out of college. And it was kind of a just a realization to me that like that was something that I actually would enjoy and
mm-hmm.
Wanted to do just at one point. So yeah, so I just had lots of really positive, good experiences with teachers.
Do you think that your experience with that religion teacher, do you think that influenced you wanting to be the classical ideas and world religions teacher?
Absolutely, yeah. So so I, in college, majored in youth ministry, actually. I went to a small Christian liberal arts college I got that degree, did an English minor, and then after I graduated, actually worked for a couple different churches doing youth ministry for mm-hmm. 5 years before I decided I wanted to switch over to doing teaching. And at that point, never really thought I'd have the opportunity to use my experience and my knowledge in religious studies, because I was, you know, I was going to be an English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously the experience of like, a lot of those experiences were helpful. But after my first 8 years of teaching, I came here to Hickman and I met Mr. Frizzell, who's retired now,
yeah.
who started the classical ideas class, taught it for years and years. And he found out about my background. We became friends. And so he started, you know, mentoring me to take over the class when he retired. And it's great. I get to use all this background that I had in studying religion in a public school setting, which is where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of perfect. I never really anticipated that would happen, but I'm really happy about it.
Yeah. Do you think that you have a duty to introduce all of those students in the classical ideas class to other religions? Like, do you think that's something that you're kind of obligated to do, or like that you have to do it well? Because for a lot of kids, that's going to be their first or maybe only introduction to a lot of world religions.
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't think I see it as a duty as far as like, I think that a person has to have that in their life necessarily, and it's my job to deliver it to them. But I think that the students who do take that class, I don't think it's a class that most people take like accidentally or they just get put in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the students that end up taking that class take it because I think they're smart enough to be to be curious, and they're smart enough to know that like understanding the multiple religions of the world is going to be a really helpful thing to know moving forward with your life, because you're going to meet all sorts of people with all different backgrounds, also it's going to open you up to new ideas. So while I don't see it necessarily as like a duty of mine to introduce people to these ideas, I do feel, I guess, really lucky to be able to do it. And I feel like my particular background and my, you know, particular areas of interest and the fact that I personally enjoy learning more about these sorts of things and want to continue to, I think makes it so that I feel like I'm well suited to do this. And I feel like, you know, I do have a responsibility to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And it it's a good feeling. It's a feeling, it's very purposeful, sort of purpose-giving kind of thing. So I do feel that way about it.
Yeah. Do you think that having taught freshman civics to a lot of students, and then you obviously grow in relationship with those students, mm-hmm. Do you think whenever you get them back as juniors or seniors, yeah. do you think that makes it easier for them to connect and like help with you? Or do you think it all either goes the opposite way and makes it harder because they feel like, oh, I can do whatever I want around this teacher and like I don't have to really pay attention? Like,
you know, there probably is a little bit of that of the second thing you were talking mm-hmm. about. I think that there are a few students that come in probably, you know, mostly because they're familiar with me. Maybe that's a bigger reason for them to want to take the class than it is the subject itself. But for the most part, I think it makes things easier because the level of comfort that I feel, about half of my students, I think, are usually students that I've had before. The level of comfort that I can feel going into a group where I already know half the people, I already know half their names, I already know some things about half the people in that room.
Yeah,
I think the beginning of the year in any class can be awkward just because we don't know each other. And so I just feel like I get a head start on that, you know? And so then I can start working on getting to know that other half and things, the community just kind of gels a little more quickly that way.
Mm-hmm.
I try to set those expectations and try to do a good job of, you know, communicating, you know, like, well, you know, this is what is expected of you in this class.
Yeah.
You know, you were freshman 2-3 years ago and it was different. But those people, you know, those people that I had as freshmen, I'm having again as juniors or seniors, they've changed a lot too. Most of them have changed quite a bit. So I think it's an advantage. And that honestly is one of my favorite things. Is getting to know a person again who's changed so much mm-hmm. and get to know them again as kind of the new person that they are is really fun for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you kind of feel like a wall that some students can put up whenever, like, let's say someone's a Christian
uh-huh.
And then they're learning about Hinduism, which is a very different religion.
Right.
Do you think that you feel like a wall, like, oh, I can't really learn about this or go into those temples, or I can't.
Yeah.
Is that a wall that you feel, and how do you try and break that down?
Sure. It doesn't happen super often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's a pretty rare thing that becomes a real impediment. Like I said before, I think the simple act of like taking the class, most people know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
I did have a student once come and ask to transfer into the class at semester, and we had a bit of a conversation about why he wanted to do that. And I ended up saying no, you can't transfer into the class, not only because of like his religious beliefs, but because he said that his attendance wasn't typically very good. And I was like, well, this is a class, it's not going to be good for you if you're not in class, because, you know, it's pretty concentrated amount of stuff that happens on a daily basis. But he said that he wanted to take the class because, you know, he was of a particular religion and felt like it was his job to, like, learn how to communicate his truth to these other religions, and just sort of indicated to me that he wasn't actually going to be very open to learning about them. And also at the beginning of the year, you know, I have students write up a page about why they're in the class mm-hmm. and why they're taking it. And if there's any red flags that pop up in those papers, then I just have a conversation with that student, you know, about that. You know, and I think honestly, the people it can be hardest for, In the sense that you're talking about, aren't necessarily people who practice a religion, but it can be people who are very like adamant about being non-religious
oh, yeah.
or atheist. And Sometimes those students are you know, some of the best students too. I'm not saying that, but like it can, that can be a barrier for them, because it is a different way of thinking, you know, like, mm-hmm. You know, religious thinking, operates on a level of, accepting things on faith without fully understanding them, always in a very logical way, that a person who has a hard time accepting that might continue to have questions and problems and wanting to challenge things. Mm-hmm. You know, and I, you know, just have, find myself having to say to people who are struggling with that, that's like, hey, it's a different way of thinking. Like, those are fantastic questions. And I know it's weird for you to hear that, like, there's not always answers to those questions, but in this, you know, in this realm, there's not always answers to those questions. So I think that can actually be a little more challenging.
Yeah.
For some people.
How do you deal with people that have those questions? Because obviously you mm-hmm. want to answer all of those questions.
Yeah.
And people who, like, maybe don't understand the concept of just accepting something on blind faith.
Right.
Like, how do you deal with those questions? Because there's not enough time in the day to
yeah.
answer those questions.
Yeah, but... yeah, for sure. Well, and I often find myself, and you've probably seen this, which is that, like, you know, we frequently get to points where it's like, man, I don't know how to answer
right.
that particular question, because it's like impossible to really always anticipate what questions a person's going to have regarding a particular faith. Because, you know, when I'm doing my studying and my reading and preparing and everything, you know, I can get myself into the mindset of that religion and that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, that in each one can be very different from each other, and what that religion emphasizes and really cares about, you know, like, you know, when we've been studying Hinduism, the idea of duty, you
yeah.
know, the idea of, you know, devotion, and those sorts of things. But then somebody might come with a question that's like, you know, about the specifics of, well, how does a soul like get reincarnated exactly? How does that work? What's like basically like the mechanics of it? And it's like, it just happens, you
yeah.
know, like, and, you know, I have to admit that, like, you know, maybe there's a text out there that talks about that, but not one that I've read.
Right.
And that for the most part, you know, people who are practicing the faith aren't really focused on that. And I can try to find that out, but it's one, you know, and so it's oftentimes it's just a process of kind of like repeatedly running into that mm-hmm. is what it takes before, you know, some folks kind of realize, oh, wait a minute. Okay. So people just sort of accept these things. That's kind of the way that it
yeah.
is. So yeah, it's a process.
is that a process that you think of as very fun, or can it get frustrating at points?
It's both, you know, like I always feel a little bit of like I've let somebody down if I can't answer their question.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so much to know. I mean, with any one religion, you could spend a lifetime, you know, learning right. everything there is to know about it, and, you know, getting to be an expert in multiple is even that much more challenging. And so I, you know, I do enjoy reading about it, and I do enjoy learning. And, you know, over the summer, usually I'll kind of pick one of the units and really dive into it and try to become a, you know, a better expert on whatever one that is. This year, it was the philosophy unit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's frustrating, but I think in a good way, because it challenges me to know more. And usually, you know, I end up having a good time with those students. You
yeah.
know, we kind of gradually get to know each other a little better, and I get to know what kinds of questions they have and how they think, and that's fun. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. And do you think that you learn a lot along the process? And do you think that's good for you?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's one of the best reasons, like, one of the best things about doing this kind of job is that, like, I get to continue to, you know, learn about things that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to put aside my interests to go to work and do something that isn't meaningful to me. I get to come to work and, you know, be challenged and learn more about stuff that I would probably be learning about and reading about anyways, just because I'm genuinely interested in it. And I get to do it with, you know, teenagers who are just constantly surprising people. Yeah. Like, you never know what to expect. And so that's all. I think of all that as a very positive thing.
Yeah. So you talked about your religious background being Christian and that you were a youth minister for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Does that background shape the way that you process the content of the class and maybe even the way that you teach the content of the class?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a great question.
Is that something that you try to remove? Like, do you try to remove that bias and teach it from a purely academic standpoint?
I think that's a fantastic question. Absolutely. I'd love to talk about that. So, the second thing you said about, like, being really conscientious of being unbiased, I think that's super important. This is public school, and it's, you know, one of our core values at Hickman is diversity.
Yeah.
You know, and being really intentional about making sure that everyone's welcome and included. And I really believe in that. And that's one of the reasons I'm here. That's one of the reasons I was attracted to this school and this community. And so I really strive to honor that and to do a good job of making that happen. So I don't really feel like that background gets in my way. At this point, I did that job years ago. like it's been a while. And so I've had 15 years of personal growth and change and everything in my own life, and I feel like a very different person than I was then. I've got kids now, and I'm, living in a new community and all of this is just, very, very different kind of life, than I had as a, fresh out of college, person. And I've learned and grown quite a bit since then. So I don't feel at all like it gets in my way. I feel like, there's, so many similarities between that job and this, and that, like, I got 5 years of practicing just how to hang out with teenagers and have relationships with them, and to not be uncomfortable or afraid to do that. And so I feel like having all of that practice helped me in that realm of teaching. And which is so important, we teachers here at Hickman, we really try to emphasize and do a good job of having positive, good relationships with students. And I feel like that's a strength of mine, largely because of that experience. I feel pretty good about my ability to not bring any sort of religious bias into it. And I'll just be straight with you. I am at this point in my life not a very religious person personally. I don't think it's appropriate for me to go into like what I believe or don't believe or anything like that. I know you're not asking, but I feel like keeping all of that out of my classroom is absolutely necessary. And just in general with my school life, keeping kind of that out of it, I think is really important. But I will tell you, just like, as a fact, that I, at this point in my life, don't belong to any kind of religious organization. So I don't feel any sort of struggle with any sort of bias at this point in teaching, multiple religions. I just through continuing to learn, about them, I just have such an appreciation for all the various traditions that we study and the ways that they've contributed to humanity and just kind of the interesting and diverse aspects of each of them and how they make you think about the world differently. That I just love that. So
yeah,
Yeah, it's so I feel like all of those, you know, all of those factors sort of add up to my feeling that, like, you know, I feel like I can do a really good job of this, and it's very fulfilling for me.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that you very much respect what all of the religions have done,
mm-hmm.
just for society.
Mm-hmm.
Something I've heard is that the Catholics,
mm-hmm.
I think it was around the 1500s,
mm-hmm.
they knew that the time of Jesus's death,
mm-hmm.
was getting out of sync.
Oh,
with their calendar. Mm-hmm. So it was moving, I think it was supposed to be in the middle of springtime, but it was, mm-hmm. moving more towards summer.
Yeah.
So they had to develop a new calendar.
Yeah.
And so a lot of Catholic scientists went out and developed a very accurate calendar so that, uh-huh. like, they developed a leap year.
Yeah.
But they also developed that once every, I think it was 100 years, where there would be a leap year, there's not a leap year because that would overcorrect.
Oh, interesting.
And okay. then once every, like, 2,000 years,
yeah,
where there would be a leap year, but then wouldn't be a leap year because that would overcorrect.
Yeah.
Now there actually is a leap year because that would overcorrect
again. Oh my
again.
Gosh. Yeah.
So they built this hyper accurate calendar that we uh-huh. use today.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, a lot of people don't like to recognize that.
Sure.
Because it's a Catholic calendar. It's a Christian calendar. So
yeah.
And that's where we got the BCE and CE instead of BCAD.
Right. Yeah.
And that's something that, like, it just blows my mind
because yeah.
like
yeah.
this religious organization, which
right.
they're religious and you don't have to believe what they believe.
Right.
But they made this amazing calendar
yeah.
in like a long time ago before we had right. any of this modern technology.
Right. Yeah, that's astounding.
I wouldn't say it's disrespectful, but it's like.
Well, I also understand. I see what you're saying, but I also understand the impulse to want to sort of remove religious language from
yeah.
Contexts in which it's being used by everyone.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I kind of can see both sides of that.
Yeah, yeah,
honestly.
Absolutely.
Honestly. That's funny. You know, well, and there's, in my saying that too, I also kind of want to recognize that, like, there's also a lot of people out there who are kind of very intent on focusing on, like, the negative things that have happened in the world because mm-hmm. of, you know, religious zealotry
oh, yeah.
and all of that sort of thing. And so I don't want to say that, like, oh, I just, you know, I'm trying to ignore all of that.
Right.
But, you know, like your story with the calendar, I think it's also, you know, there's absolutely been a lot of positive contributions,
mm-hmm.
you know, made to the world by religion and, you know, so most people throughout history and for most of human history have had some sort of, you know, religion as part of their lives. And it would just be sort of foolish to think that we could understand history, understand culture without having at least an understanding of a diversity of religions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you think that your teaching of many religions, although you said you don't practice a religion
mm-hmm.
now, do you think that still shapes the way that you try and act and uphold yourself, just as being a better person?
Yeah,
or like
definitely
trying to fulfill your dharma.
Sure, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's actually really inspiring. You know, whenever we get like a guest speaker in class, you know, getting to know people around the community who have these different practices. And seeing the way that it shapes their ethics,
mm-hmm.
Seeing the way that it sort of orders their lives, is really inspiring. Absolutely. And, you know, I definitely, you know, gain from that. I definitely, you know, find kind of new things in my own life to sort of incorporate to help me to, you know, be a more compassionate person, be a more stable person, be a more understanding person and whatnot. So I get a lot out of it,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely, even as a you know, even if, you know, I'm not a Hindu just hanging out with Dr. Gopal, or I'm not a Jain just hanging out with Najan Jain, you know, people like that are super inspiring to me. So it definitely makes an impact on me. And I enjoy that aspect of it quite a bit.
Yeah. So for my philosophy project for you this year, I'm exploring the idea of what is real. And I'm kind of shaping that a little bit more to like the idea of simulated reality.
Yeah.
Have you given any thought to the idea of simulation theory, or have you heard of simulation theory?
Yeah. I've had some conversations with people about it, just because it's kind of a interesting topic. It's kind of a hot topic, you know, that people like talking about right now, and with all the advances that are being made in artificial intelligence, I think it's becoming more and more like on people's minds. Like just this week, Google announced that they had created a quantum computer.
Yeah.
Which could be a major game changer for the whole world right there. If those become something that are more easily manufactured, if they can figure out how to get the cost down on making them, I mean, that's just going to really change everything. I've liked watching Black Mirror, and we visited my wife's uncle in Seattle this summer, and he gets really into talking about those sorts of things. So we had some conversations about that, and so I've thought about it. I've had conversations about it. I think it's really fun to think about. Mm-hmm. It's really stimulating to think about. I don't personally feel the need to declare whether or not I think that we're in a simulation. I mean, certain arguments, you know, are really good and show that the likelihood is that we are. But I read something recently that was making the case that like, even if we were in a simulation, the worst possible thing that we could do is to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've been seeing that too. Cause there's hypotheticals that there's multiple hypotheticals on whether, if we figure out what happens. One of which is, if we figure it out, then just no one cares or does anything anymore. Sure. And it's life just kind of sucks.
Right.
But another hypothetical is, if we figure out that we're in a simulation, then that knowledge itself could get to the people running the simulation.
Yeah.
And they just shut it off.
Pull the plug, right? Because it's not useful anymore.
Right. and that kind of raises the question, maybe not individually, like, hey, do you want to know if we're in a simulation, but do we?
Yeah, like, as a society, is this something we want to
even look at?
Do we want our really smart people spending their time trying to figure this out or not? Do we want to put our
not because that
this?
They could be using it somewhere else, but that it could end us entirely.
Yeah. So I think that's really interesting you're talking about that sort of macro level and micro level. I think that idea that on the macro level it's really not a good idea for us to pursue this knowledge, I think affirms kind of what I just feel as a personal and individual level, that like, how useful is this for me beyond it's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely fascinating, but I tend to be someone who wants to focus on the here and now. To focus on like how can I live a good life, and if this life ends up being a simulation, it's still the one I had, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's awesome you're doing your project on that.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe we haven't figured out yet some avenues in which, you know, if we continue to explore this question, maybe we'll learn some things that we didn't anticipate learning. Mm-hmm. So, I don't ever think it's a good idea to shut down questions necessarily.
Yeah.
But, so I'll be interested to see what you come up with.
Yeah. and still others hypothesize that if we were to find out that we were in a simulation, and let's say it doesn't end, and let's say society doesn't go down the drain, maybe we could use the simulation to hack into the simulation, or
oh my
manipulate
gosh.
It in a way that like we can end world hunger or bring world peace like explore.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
So maybe we should be trying to figure out if this is a simulation.
Potentially improve our situation. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, and then at that point too, like if a simulated being becomes aware that it's a simulated being, but then continues to exist with that knowledge, all of a sudden, I think that the status of that being kind of changes, you know, to
you
where
mean like enlightened in a way.
Yeah. And in that, like if you want to think about the idea of personhood, like what do we consider a person? So if you or I like wrote a computer program and made this simulation that was happening, we probably wouldn't consider the quote unquote people in that simulation to possess full personhood, right? Yeah. Like to be people in the sense that we are people. But if those simulated persons, I think, became aware of that, but continue to exist with that knowledge, I think that that would strengthen their case for being considered for like full personhood or whatever you want to call it, you know?
Because they're aware that there is another level.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that that's one of the areas that I think simulation, thinking about simulation becomes useful in making ourselves ask and seriously consider that question. What sorts of beings consider or deserve our consideration as being full people, you know, because there's some people want to ask this about, you know, do animals deserve that consideration?
Yeah.
You know, will artificial intelligence, when it inevitably gets to the point that it's thinking like we think, will they deserve that full and the rights that go along with that? You know, I think that those are questions we're going to have to be asking ourselves.
Do you think that there's any anything that we need to be watching out for as far as creating our own simulations? Like, do we need to have an ethical thought about that? Like, is that something that should be up to the philosophers on?
I think so. Yeah. I think that, you know, I think that's one of the important new frontiers of ethics that's going to have to be sorted out. You know, what, I mean, as a species, we're not really doing a very good job of affording full rights to even people who are obviously human. And so, like, you know, that's a topic that I care a lot about. But we're going to have to be forward thinking on that because it's, I mean, you know, we're going to be able to create very lifelike artificial intelligence in not too many years, I think. And yeah, absolutely. That's got to be done.
Do you think that we're moving in a way that would make it ethical? Or do you think that we're going to end up like just using AI as our slaves?
Yeah, I don't. And honestly, I think, at this point in the discussion, like I would have to like, I feel like I'd have to learn more. I'd have to like, you know, say there's people out there who know a lot more than me on that. I'm, you know, kind of a novice on this subject. But you know, from what I do know, I guess it doesn't. I don't have a whole lot of faith that like we would, as humanity, come to a unified understanding of what are our ethics concerning this, because we, like I said, we tend to not do a very good job of that. So, but it would be good if we could.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you my idea on simulation theory.
Cool. Yeah. Let's hear it.
I think that it's highly possible that we're living in a simulated reality. But whether it's from an advanced civilization that creates computer code and we're in that, or if it's from an advanced deity or a god that creates us, that possibly offers some sort of escape out of this simulated reality. I don't think that we can know exactly who our creator is, but I think that it's very possible that we're in a simulated reality, and I would err on most definitely.
Likely. Yeah. Most definitely. Oh, yeah. You'd err on that end. Okay. That's fascinating. So I mean, not to turn the interview on you, but does that have like an effect on how you think about your daily life?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a very big struggle for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a Christian, so piecing my religion along with that idea, is very difficult.
Yeah.
But I think that the more I think about it, like, there are ways, mm-hmm. There are ways to piece it in together without me feeling like I have two things and I'm just ramming them together, hoping that they fit. But I think there's a way that they do kind of fit together.
Sure. Cool.
As does science, I think, at the same time.
Yeah.
A lot of people argue about, was Earth created in 7 days or were we evolved over the course of several thousand years?
Yeah. I'll tell you a little bit about my college experience. One of the sayings, one of the big sort of mottos that all of my religion professors espoused was that all truth is God's truth.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked to say that pretty frequently as a way of sort of assuaging any fears that, you know, any of the students might have about, oh my gosh, we can't study evolution. Like you know, and that sort of thing. And they would say, hey, listen, you can't be afraid of truth. Like, you know, if you truly believe that, like, this is a universe that God created, and this, and we can prove that here's one way that this universe operates, then those two things inevitably go together, even if you don't fully understand it right now. So they really encouraged us to be, you know, open to inquiry in that way. And I particularly remember a science professor that I had, one of the few science classes that I actually took as a gen ed. But we were talking about, Big Bang Theory. And his way of explaining it was really funny. He was like, he just said, well, you know, I don't have a problem with Big Bang Theory because, God said bang and it happened. Like, he was like, you know, and it sounds kind of silly and sort of like, you know, simplistic, but, you know, that was just his sort of way of encouraging us to say, hey, listen, you know, like, your religious beliefs don't have to like be in conflict, you know, with any of these things. And so I really appreciated that about my school. So I would encourage you in the same way to be like, you know what, like, you know, these two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. I can continue to do both and figure it out. Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of turn it on its head a little bit.
Yeah.
What are some ing verbs that you would use to describe what you do, mm-hmm. what you like, or like what you like doing? So like, for me, examples would be leading, learning, and thinking. So like, what are some ing verbs that you describe you?
All right. So like, as a teacher, or like just as a person, or both?
Just
whatever.
Just what describes Mr. McFarland?
Oh man. Okay. Let's see. Learning.
Mm-hmm.
Idling. Exploring.
Mm.
Relating. Enjoying. Trying.
So elaborate on idling.
Yeah. I read this book a couple years ago called How to Be Idle that is like draws on some philosophy, but it's kind of, it's almost like self-help sounds like really cheesy and awful. And I would never like encourage anybody to read anything with the label self-help on it. But like, I don't know, there's kind of like, there's this sort of realm of like, sort of almost like philosophy light kind of books where it's like, hey, let's like talk about philosophy, but in ways that are like helpful in daily life. Anyways, it was one of those kind of books. And it had a really big impact on me in that I think it talked a lot about how our society is very fast paced and about how we always are pushing ourselves. It's very Taoist in a sense that like, of you know, just learning to be, is super important. And that possibly doing less is one of the things that would help most of us the most. and so it was a book that took those ideas and sort of like put them in into sort of practical day-to-day things, and a lot about how to just like enjoy life. I think that there was a chapter on like fishing. I don't fish a lot, but I enjoy fishing, you know. And you know, a chapter on like sleeping, a chapter on meditating, whatever, like all sorts of activities that like really slow you down, you know, and help you kind of reconnect and to get your values back aligned, you know, with just being who you are instead of like always trying to make more things happen. So I've kind of held on to that quite a bit, and I think about it a lot.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mr. McFarland.
You bet. This was fun.
On the podcast. Yeah. It was very fun.
Cool.
All right. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Coffee with Creamer.